Now, stand back for your own safety.
You're not going crazy, Arthur. You're going sane in a crazy world.
Good news, everyone. I'm sending you on an extremely controversial mission.
Controversial?
Oh my, no.
You don't have a reflection.
Are you a vampire?
Am I a vampire?
It certainly is not every day that a man attains the exalted position of temporary honorary colonel. I thank you.
Welcome to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, the mostly weekly podcast by the Court of Nerds that brings news, reviews, and topics from the world of geekdom. The views expressed in this podcast are solely that of Kevin and not that of the Court of Nerds at large, and is meant for entertainment purposes only. Now your host for this misadventure, Mr. Sledge.
Welcome to episode number 23 of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, and boy do I have a mediocre show lined up for you this week, because I once again get fixated on a single topic, and what can only be tangentially labeled a geeky podcast. Not because I'm not a geek, but this assortment of audio miscues more resembles white noise than a coherent train of thought. Speaking of annoying sounds and cognitive dissonance, I was planning on having McDonald's be this week's sponsor along with their spokesperson, Donald Trump. But due to the Szechuan sauce fiasco, I decided to do an advertisement for our actual sponsor, Tom and Chi. Jeez. Now it says, wait for the glaze to caramelize before adding whatever this packet is. Well, I guess it's caramelized. Here it goes. Whoa, okay. Is the chicken skin supposed to be boiling off? And where are the water chestnuts? I only got a bag of what appears to be three half-digested acorns.
Dad, when's dinner gonna be ready?
According to this blue apron recipe, about 15 minutes ago.
What are you making, Dad?
The instructions say it's a balsamic glazed chicken breast with baby kale water chestnut salad. But it looks more like what I raked off of our lawn. Ow! I think the kale just bit me.
I want a grilled cheese!
But I subscribe to this stupid service for a reason. I mean, if it costs just as much as eating out, it should be just as good, right?
Not the way you do it, Daddy!
Well, ow! The chicken is jumping out of the pan! What kind of black magic is this?
If you take me to Tom and Chi now, we won't tell Mom about this.
Deal. But you have to help me perform an exorcism on a zombie chicken first.
Not again! Last time I got covered in holy water.
That was grape soda.
Same thing.
Remember a couple of weeks ago I did an entire podcast dedicated to the Apple big reveal, and last week I talked about Amazon's big reveal? Guess who had a big reveal? Google! Now, I know what you're probably thinking. Oh great, Kevin is going to break down a list of Gurgle products like he's standing next to Olivia Munn and this is Gadget Prawn. Well, yes. But I will also rant about the things like software-hardware integration and Bluetooth fragmentation. So it's also an editorialized Wheel of Insanity topic all wound up into one ball of megacorporation goodness. So hold on to your squeezable, because this is a new segment I'm calling... News for Rant's Sake. So, how about we start with what everyone knew was coming? Google showcased the new Pixel 2 and Pixel 2 XL phones, the sequels to the first ever Google Design Android handsets. Both devices look sharp, minimal, and sport what the company says is one of the best mobile cameras on the market, with the original Pixel buyers able to testify the device's line prowess in the picture-taking department. Don't just take Google's word for it. The Pixel 2's camera really does stand out, more so than last year's model. The best part, however, is if you don't have to choose what camera you get. Like last year's model, Pixel 2 and Pixel 2 XL have the same single-lens setup. Google decided to only differentiate its pricier XL version with a larger screen and bigger battery. The company also put a lot of the same photo tricks you get with the dual-camera iPhone 8 Plus or the iPhone X. That means you get the background blurring effects on both the front-facing and rear-facing camera of the Pixel 2 phones, without needing a price bump inherent in adding a new component. The promise of the Google-made phone has always been more on the software than the hardware. Beyond the stock Android you get with the Pixel device, Google this time around is also packing some powerful artificial intelligence and augmented reality features that will hopefully keep its smartphones competitive with the iPhone and ARK kit. And to a lesser extent, Samsung and Bixby. On the new Pixels, you get a Google Lens, the company's new on-demand object recognition tool, built in. The Pixel 2 is the first phone to fully support this platform, and Google says it will now work with a handful of useful-sounding categories like books, movie posters, business cards, and landmarks. Google is also positioning the AR Core framework similarly to Apple's AR Kit, and it shows some new AR stickers, including life-size cartoony versions of Stranger Things characters, to hammer home the point. Perhaps the strangest but also most promising new feature of this category is Google's new assistant squeeze activation, in which you gently apply pressure to the sides of your phone to automatically activate Google-based AI companion. Telling users to squeeze their consumer electronics is a bit odd, but in practice it sounds like an intuitive way to activate the assistant, which Google hopes will become one of Android's most useful and powerful software differentiators. Plus, with the giant Pixel 2 XL, activating Assistant with a squeeze will work great without needing to reach your thumb over. The always-on displays were a big thing just a few years ago, during the original Moto X era, but it seemed to fall out of favor with consumers out of battery life concerns. Now, with more AI-assisted smarts built into our phones, Google is bringing the always-on display back with its Pixel 2 devices, with one neat twist. On top of being able to display notifications and the time at a glance and remain primed for the OK Google command, the Pixel 2 will also listen for any ambient music playing, which it will try to identify on the fly. That's a huge plus for Shazam lovers, as the biggest pain for using music tagging software is making sure you can deploy it fast enough to catch an identifiable snippet of the song playing before it's gone. This happens to me all the time when I'm listening to something on the radio. Yes, I still listen to the radio, shut up. Or if there is a soundtrack or something playing in a movie or on television, and I don't want to manually look it up, I just want to press a button on my phone, but sometimes it takes forever to come up. So if it's always listening to begin with, then I can just glance down at my phone and see, oh, hey, this is such and such song from such and such artist. Shut up, I couldn't think of anything on the fly. Of course, with every new phone, there are some drawbacks, but be it a compromises on price or screen size or battery life, obnoxious changes to ports, or some other addition or subtraction that makes it harder to transition from one device to another. The Pixel 2 is no different, though it is much like its predecessor and reliably lacking in big and obvious flaws. Here are some negative aspects of the Pixel 2 and Pixel 2 XL worth considering before upgrading your Android phone and jumping ship from iOS. This is a controversial one. Following both Apple and Android phone makers like Lenovo and LE Echo, Google has decided to scrap the 3.5mm headphone jack on the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL. It's been a whole year since the iPhone 7, with its lightning port, kicked up a fair deal of dongle drama, and the world has more or less come to terms with the loss of our on-device auxiliary ports, even it has caused some headaches and justifiable backlash. This still doesn't make it any easier for prospective Pixel buyers who really want to change their phone and listen to music at the same time, or who own previous pre-USB-C headphones. Making matters worse, Google seems to have a dongle pricing problem. The company bundles a 3.5mm to USB-C headphone adapter in the box with each new Pixel phone. But lose that, and you'll need to shell out $20, which is more than twice what Apple charges for its similar 3.5mm to Lightning adapter. Google is also peddling a $44.95 Moshi-made third-party adapter for listening to music and charging your phone at the same time. That's $10 more than Apple's similar Belkin-made one. And here we are thinking only Apple could charge exorbitant prices for accessories you didn't need a year ago. Another shortcoming of the larger Pixel 2 XL is the bigger screen is not quite as impressive from the design standpoint as Samsung's Galaxy S8 or Note 8 or Apple's iPhone X or iPhone X, I forget what we're supposed to call it. All four of these phones have large eye-popping OLED displays. But what sets the Pixel 2 XL apart is that somewhat hefty bezels on the top, bottom, and sides of the device. Of course, it's not super noticeable, and the screen still does look rather gorgeous. It also doesn't have that signature iPhone X notch that looks as if it'll be quite annoying to aesthetics and software design hurdles. But if you're a big fan of the edge-to-edge design of Samsung and the generous amount of real screen estate for the compact package you get with the iPhone X, the Pixel 2 XL is lacking on that front. The end result seems to be that Google is trying to split the road between Apple and Samsung in design aesthetics. If Apple iPhone 8 is the past and Galaxy S8 is the future, Google wants to be in the present.
You know you're spreading cream cheese on your iPhone.
Oh, where's my bagel?
Now on to the items that we knew were coming out, but not really excited over. The new Google Homes, commercials of which are at least less annoying than the Alexa commercials. There are two new home speakers, and they are weirder looking than before, but not really in a bad sort of way. They look like puffy colored coasters. But what's really different is all the stuff they're supposedly able to do now. You can already say good morning to the Google Home and get info on traffic, the weather, and the latest news. But Google is planning to amp up this feature quite a bit. It'll let homeowners build routines around good morning commands and good night commands. So soon you'll be able to set the home up to trigger a bunch of smart home devices when it hears those phrases. Good night, for example, could tell a home to arm your alarm system and turn off the lights. Good morning could maybe turn on your coffee maker, you know? Or raise the temperature in your house if you have a Nest speaker system, for instance. These are the things that are already possible using third-party services like IFTTT, but building them into core Google commands should make it a bit easier to use a lot and a lot more accessible. Google didn't say exactly when this feature will roll out, but one would think that it has to be timed with the launch of the Home Mini in a couple of weeks or the Max in December. There are two other speakers that are going to be coming out. Man, there's a lot of speakers anymore. If you have an Android phone that supports the Google Assistant, you'll be able to tell the Assistant to broadcast a message, and that message will then be read aloud by every home speaker in your house. It sounds like a helpful way to get a message across to a family members and roommates, and even a better way to endlessly annoy them. Back when I was an undergrad, I lived in a house with seven other guys. This technology would have been used every time somebody got lucky. And I mean every time. Google has introduced a second voice option for the Google Assistant, which means you'll also have a second option for the Google Home. Two options are named Voice I and Voice II. Oh, I'm sorry, it's Voice 1 and Voice 2. With a newer one having a male-sounding voice. Good on Google for continuing to offer only major voice assistant steers free of gendered names and descriptions. Google didn't announce this on stage, but the Android police spotted the smart but simple new feature, the ability to send queries to your phone. Basically, after you ask the home a question, you'll be able to say, "Okay, Google, send this to my phone," to have it pop up on your phone, which sounds pretty convenient. It'll only work for specific categories of questions, though, including questions related to movies, translations, news, weather, and your calendar. Here's another simple but practical application for the new speaker. You can now say, "Okay, Google, find my phone," and Google will start to ring your phone. It works on both iOS and Android, though there's a slight advantage for the Android devices here, go figure. If an iOS device is on silent, it won't ring, but Google is able to make Android devices ring even if they are normally silenced. Google is adding a bunch of what it is calling family fun features, but really they're just features designed to entertain your kids or help your kids play games. First, Google says it's made the home better at understanding children's voices, and it's adding support for supervised Google accounts, known as Family Link accounts. The bigger addition is 50-some new games and skills meant for kids to play with. The home will be able to offer science quizzes and trivia games, tell riddles, beatbox, and play freeze tag and musical chairs. It'll also be able to tell stories, a mix of classic fairy tales like Snow White and some originals. Google is even partnering with Disney, among others, to get stories voiced by Mickey, Lightning McQueen, and some Star Wars characters. These are all supposed to roll out later this month. If you have a Google Home and a Chromecast connected to your TV, you might be able to ask Google to turn on your TV and turn it off. I might say might because there are two big caveats. Your TV has to support HDMI CEC, which lets Chromecast send commands to your TV over HDMI, and your Chromecast has to be plugged in to a power outlet instead of getting power from your TV set. Hence, if the TV was powered off, the Chromecast wouldn't work. It's a cool feature, one that Xbox Kinect users have been using for about 7 years and using better by the sounds of it. Google and Nest share the same parent company, so naturally the two are partnering on some deep home integrations. That includes more phrases for controlling Nest thermostats like make it warmer and commands to quickly pull up the Nest Cam streams. One of those is, okay Google, show me the entryway to have your home pull up specific camera video streams from your TV. The home is getting a phrase to tap on the Nest new doorbell camera too. Show me the front door so that you don't have to get up from watching television. And finally, here's a small but important update to Home's phone calling feature. Now when you make a phone call through Google Home, you can display your own number on the caller ID to whoever you're calling. Previously, it would just display a random number, which meant a very good chance someone was not picking up. The update makes for pretty good timing too. Amazon just added this feature to the Echo earlier this year.
Okay, fellas, nerd it up.
We've been developing a new search engine. And unlike language-based search engines,
this face-matching technology uses visual recognition.
Less nerd, more English.
You take an image of a person.
Or picture.
And scan it into a computer.
Or magic box.
I'm not embarrassed to say this is helping.
The last device I will talk about is what surprised everyone. Google's new headphones. The new Pixel Buds borrow a lot of ideas from Apple's AirPods. They have a new, easier way to pair with your phone. They come with a little battery case. They use touch controls, and they have tight integration with their virtual and intelligent assistant. They're also priced exactly the same at $159 and are coming out in November. On the other hand, Pixel Buds are neck buds, not truly wireless earbuds. They lack some of the technical whiz-bang of the AirPods, like auto-detecting when they're in your ear. The choices Google made with the design of the Pixel Buds speak to Google's emerging values when it comes to its hardware products. Be pragmatic and lean on Google's core technologies whenever possible. Neck buds aren't cool, but having headphones sitting around your neck all the time is definitely convenient. The Pixel Buds are wireless headphones with a cloth cord connecting the left to the right. They are, as I said, neck buds, and that isn't a word you like to hear Google utter, but it is in some ways what they're nicer than traditional neck buds. The cord that connects them is a bit shorter and more flexible than other neck bud cords, and the fact that it's cloth makes it slightly more comfortable. It also doesn't have a battery bump or a physical control pod. Everything is integrated directly into the buds themselves. That cord is key to the relatively unique way Pixel Buds are worn. They're earbuds, not in-ear headphones. They don't fit into your ear canal at all, not even as much as Apple's AirPods do. Instead, they nestle into your outer ear and stay anchored in place by a small loop formed by the cord. You adjust the cord length to the length that fits your ear and then pop them in. Product manager Adam Campy says Google didn't like the way in-ear headphones forces users to handle sizing. You either ask to take the headphone apart or put something in your ear that won't fit. He says that the loop fits into a non-sensitive part of the ear and the whole system is stable enough to go running with it. The Pixel Buds come with little cloth-covered cases that can also recharge when they are low. Google says they should last about 5 hours on a charge, and the cases can charge them 4 times. So, 20 hours of charge, before fully having to recharge. That's pretty convenient. I watched a demo of the new pairing workflow, and it's pretty straightforward. When you open the case next to your Pixel phone, the auto pair feature only works with Pixels, by the way, a new little notification pops up showing that the Pixel Buds and their battery life, and tap the notification, and kapow, they're paired. The case has a couple of little slots in the earbuds to put the earbuds in, with contact points to charge them. The cord wraps around the channel of the and tucks between the two buds. In theory, it's a nice, elegant system for storing and charging your earbuds. In practice, well, we don't really know how that's going to work. Google chooses to make these headphones semi-oculate. Unlike in-ear headphones, they don't seal your ear canal, but instead just sit over it. That's good if you want headphones that don't block out the world around you entirely, but not necessarily what audiophiles really want. Aesthetically, I don't think anybody has figured out a great way to make wireless earbuds not look kind of dopey. Google's attempt to turn the earbuds into a large package with a big, touch-sensitive area, they come in 3 colors, white, gray, and black, and they have tiny plastic bauble on the cord with an accent color that matches the accent colors of the Pixel 2 phones. You control the earbuds with a few different gestures on the right earbud, tapping it, and it maps a play, pause. Swiping forward increases the volume, back decreases the volume. Google found a ways to try to swipe up and down sometimes ended up making the headphones pop out. If you hear the notification chime in, you can double tap and have it read aloud to you. Unfortunately, there's no accommodation for skipping tracks, nor is there any way to customize the controls. Google says that the software updates to enable something like skipping tracks might come in the future. There are no promises, but the company is exploring options. The earbuds will update silently, meaning Google can just push out changes through Android phones automatically. This emphasis on Android here. However, although Putzelbugs will work with an iPhone and even Siri, they can only be updated when paired with Android phones. The real purpose of the Pixel Buds is to give you faster and easier access to Google Assistant. If there's a thing that stands out about them, it's how well it works. To activate Assistant, just hold your finger down on the right earbud and start talking. The Pixel Buds send your voice to the phone immediately when you do this, without making you wait for a beep or a confirmation or whatever. When you lift your finger, there's a very subtle audio cue, and then the assistant speaker speaks in response back to you. This sort of experience is closer to the thing that everybody's been hoping for for the AirPods, something like the Move Her, where the audible computer is always there, waiting to listen. It removes friction by removing latency. You just tap and ask. It's not worth breathless exclamations about how this enables the next step of computing, but I did find it fast and convenient to see on the screen. I actually might want these. I'm less sure if the other headline feature for the Pixel Buds will be as convenient, but it's certainly impressive. Since the Google Translate app can translate about 40 different languages, that's 1,600 combinations, so can Pixel Buds. There's another pop culture reference to evoke here, like the Babelfish from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but translating the Pixel Buds is not that seamless. You hold your finger down on the ear and say, "Help me speak French," and you speak a phrase. When you lift your finger, the Translate app speaks and displays your translation. Then the person you're speaking to holds the button down on your phone and says a reply, and then you hear it in your ear. I'm a little dubious that this is any more convenient than passing the phone back and forth and doing something like everybody does nowadays, but this is actually really cool to look at and experience. If this is going to be the case in the future, then, well, man, you can travel pretty much anywhere on the planet and not have a problem acclimating until, you know, the person grabs your phone and runs off with it. Didn't think of that, did you, Google? Like most of the hardware Google announced this year, Pixel Buds emphasize practicality over style. As silly as they may look to some, it's convenient to just have a pair of headphones sitting around your neck at all times. You can grab them, put them in your ear without fiddling around with the case. However, I do wish they would turn off automatically when they're not in your ear. There's another thing Google is looking into, since the body of the bud is technically a captive sensor. I wouldn't expect Pixel Buds to sell huge numbers to compete with Apple's AirPods. You can use them with any phone, but they're meant to work primarily with Pixel phones. And neither new Pixel phones will sell in volumes remotely comparable to any of the iPhones. It seems clear that removing the headphone jack requires some sort of vision for what better headphone experience can look like. And like so much of Google's new hardware, Pixel Buds are far more pragmatic than flashy. And pragmatic is nice. But with any headphones, we really need to give them a full review before we can say they're good. So maybe I can convince my wife I can get some new earbuds for Christmas?
Well, hello there.
Hello.
Phil Myman. Scientist. Two people behind you in the lunch line yesterday. I trust you enjoyed your applesauce.
It was fine. Apples and sauce. What could be bad about that?
I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to correct you. It's actually apples made into sauce. So, phone numbers. Those things are crazy, right?
Mm. Can I help you with something?
Oh, maybe. Do you know her phone number?
Yeah, it's the same as mine.
Well, don't pick up when I call.
Now here's where I get a bit meta, and I talk about the real-world implications of corporate design philosophy. There have always been two competing philosophies at the heart of computer science, the open source versus the walled garden. To say open source is a bit anachronistic, because there are gradations of openness just as there might be differences in the height of different walls around a garden. To clarify, when I say walled garden, think of Apple design and philosophy, hardware and software closely integrated. When I say open source, I mean most PC design and philosophy up until the recent day. You have to make software that works with a wide, and I mean wide, variety of hardware because you don't know what people are going to be using that software for or with. From Linux to Windows, you have to make sure that most of your stuff works on most of the other stuff. Being open has had advantage for a long time. That is until the flowers that were peeking up behind the walls became attractive and people started paying to get into the garden. Being open had its advantages for the longest time. That is, until the flowers that were peeking up behind the walls became attractive and people started paying to get into the garden. Now, Apple does make their products for those who live outside the garden, but those products will never work as well as they do inside the garden. That is purposeful. Apple wants to convince people to come inside their walls so they can be a captive consumer. I mean, gardener. Whatever. Microsoft and Google saw what Apple was doing, saw how profitable it was, and decided they could do that too. Microsoft is an old company in terms of computer companies, and they couldn't really pull it off in the mobile market, but are having some slight success in the 2-in-1 market and laptops, where in the future, using Microsoft Store might be mandatory like Google for Android and Apple for, well, everything. Google has done what Apple has done, and in many ways, better, and is now pushing their weight around. Oh, Amazon, you're making a really good AI-powered speaker with a screen. That might affect our sales, so we're pulling YouTube off it. What's that, Microsoft? You want to put your surprisingly good web browser on iOS? Well, you have to use our browser and reskin it to look like yours. What is happening is that all these devices are beginning to get put into walled gardens, and the vast open spaces of yesteryear are becoming barren. And because of that, software and hardware that is so integrated will lead to technological fragmentation. Take Bluetooth, for example. Google phones and iPhones don't have headphone jacks. Samsung still does, and will forever if you believe them. I don't. But if Google and Apple agree on something, then it has to be the correct decision, right? So here's the problem. Headphones, as we have understood them for decades, were once terrifically simple. You could plug in any headphone from virtually anywhere and into virtually anything, and they would just work. Anyone could make headphones. Anyone could sell them. And all of these people could address the entire market of people who wanted to listen to things. As the headphone jack disappears, the obvious replacement isn't another wire with a proprietary connector like Apple's Lightning or many incompatible strange flavors of USB-C audio. It's Bluetooth, and Bluetooth continues to suck for a variety of reasons. Newer phones like the iPhone 8, Galaxy S8, and the Pixel 2 have Bluetooth 5, which promises to be better, but one, there's literally no Bluetooth 5 headphones out yet, and two, we've definitely heard that promise before. To improve Bluetooth, platform vendors like Apple and Google are riffing on top of it, and that means they're building custom solutions. And building custom solutions mean they're taking the opportunity to prioritize their own products, because that is a fair and rational thing for a platform vendor to do, right? Ultimately, what's fair and rational for platform vendors isn't always great for markets, competition, and consumers. And at the end of the road, we'll have to take in a simple universal thing that enabled a vibrant market with tons of options for every consumer and turned it into yet another limited market defined by ecosystem lock-in. 10 years from now, every Nintendo device will ship with one pair of headphones that can only be used with that specific individual console. You might laugh, but if this continues, that's what's going to happen. The playbook is simple. Last year, Apple dropped the headphone jack and replaced it with a W1 system, which basically a custom controller chip and software management layer for Bluetooth. The exemplary set of W1 headphones is, of course, AirPods, but Apple also owns Beats, and there are a few sets of W1 Beats headphones available as well. You can still use regular Bluetooth headphones with an iPhone, and you can use AirPods as a regular Bluetooth headphones, but the combination of iPhone and W1 experience is obviously superior to anything else on the market. No one else can make W1 headphones, and obviously no one else can modify iOS to support their own custom wireless Bluetooth RIF. So your choices are 4 W1 headphones and a large market of second-class citizens. Google's version of this is the Pixel Buds. You want seamless fast pairing? You need Android N or higher, which most Android phones don't have right now. The always-on access to Google Assistant, you want that? That's only for Android phones with Google Assistant. iPhone owners need not apply. And that cool Google Translate integration with Pixel Buds instantly translate languages in real time? Well, that's entirely exclusive to the Pixel. Zooming out, it's also easy to see that headphones are becoming a major piece of voice assistant puzzle, and the dominant players in mobile platforms are going to prioritize their own products in significant ways so that they can get those assistants in your ears. I would be shocked if Samsung didn't kill the headphone jack in the next iteration of the Galaxy line and come out with the special wireless headphones with exclusive features like access to Bixby. But then again, Bixby sucks, so why do that? Third-party vendors like Shure and Bose should be scared out of their minds. They will never get the system-level access they need to compete with the platform owners. Pebble failed as a smartwatch in part because it didn't have enough access to operating systems to do things that the Apple Watch and Android Wear can do, like reply to text messages. The future is coming for your favorite headphone company. How does Skullcandy or Bowers & Wilkins compete with their relegated to second-class connectivity and feature sets? Why would any rational customer buy anything but a wireless headphones guaranteed to work the best with their phones? Maybe this will all shake out and everything will be fine. Maybe Bluetooth 5 is actually wonderful. But there's a version of the world coming where ecosystem lock-in extends to headphones and speakers, and where every device you own has a different first-party set of wireless audio accessories that work best inside a closed loop of software and services. And that's when the walls of the garden start closing in. And that is a pretty user-hostile world, and it's pretty stupid. That's all I have to say for this week's Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. I'll be seeing you all soon at Grand Rapids Comic Con in less than 2 weeks. I'm Kevin from The Court Nerd saying, in a world full of podcast advertisers, get Drew to read one of them at the end of the show for you. Bye!
Hey guys, it's Drew, letting you know that Tom and Chi is proud to sponsor the Court of Nerds and Grand Rapids Comic Con. Stop by their setup in the main hall for $4 grilled cheese classics with fresh tomatoes, mozzarella, and gooey cheddar. $4 barbecue and bacon grillers, and $4 GCDs, Tom and Chi's fantastic grilled cheese donut. Top it all off with the grilling joke, a Comic-Con special GCD with blueberry mascarpone, graham crackers, and Pop Rocks. Eat what's fun, Tom and Chi.